Okay, we're going to call the House Finance Committee meeting to order. The time is about 1:35. For the record, the members present, Representative Moses, Representative Holmes, Representative Foster, Co-Chair Representative Schnault, Vice Chair Representative Stoltz, and Representative Parker. And let's see, Representative Wyrock is previously excused. And as my understanding, we have Representative Croft with us via teleconference. Are you with us today, Representative Croft?
He's not showing up here yet.
Okay. Well, good. Maybe we will move this bill out then. on today's calendar, we just have one bill, the House Bill 79, appropriation to the Division of Elections. And then after that, we'll take up an overview with the Aetna Healthcare Program Premium, I guess it is, Healthcare Premium. This bill, House Bill 79, if Laura, you want to come on up, please. It's my intent to go ahead and take the public testimony on this today and probably close public hearing and hold the bill. I understand there's another bill similar to this on the Senate side that's already on the floor and will be coming over to us, so we'll wait and see what they give us. Let's see what the differences are at that time. So, with that in mind, I'm going to turn over to Laura Glaser with the Division of Elections. Laura, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Laura Glaser, Director of the Division of Elections. Mr. Chairman, would you like me to just go through the handout on anticipated costs and excessive expenditures? Would you like to ask specific questions? How would you like me to go through this?
Yeah, why don't you give us a brief overview, Laura, and then we'll open it up to questions at that time.
Mr. Chairman, this year was an amazing year for the Division of Elections. There were many things going on simultaneously that added an incredible burden to the division. We processed five initiative petitions, a recall petition, a record number of absentee by-mail applications, voter registration changes. All of that added to an additional workload, and we needed to hire 17 temporary employees to process in the division, in the director's office alone, to process the absentee ballot requests. And you'll see that's noted approximately $304,000 additional costs. As you know, there was a court case and the Superior Court decision ordered that we reprint the general election ballots. That expenditure was over $243,000. We absorbed those costs, which is why we're here for a supplemental. Approximately $203,000 for reprinting the ballots, expedited freight costs, $35,000, destroying the previously printed ballots, about $4,000, and then additional personal services costs that were minimal. Just to note there, great Alaskan success story, we do have an Alaskan printer who prints our ballots, Homer Printworks, and those people went above and beyond the call of duty to anticipate our needs and to do the ballot reprint, and there was barely a hiccup in service for us to get those ballots turned around and into the regional offices. The cost for conducting the MOA election, I believe in your packets, is a copy of the contract that we signed with the Municipality of Anchorage to add two bond questions to the general election ballot. We have not as yet billed the Municipality of Anchorage, but as you know, those when they're billed, the money goes into the general fund. So again, the Division of Elections absorbs those costs.
Sure. Representative Stoltz has a question.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairman Meyer and Ms. Glaser. Is that the Municipality of Anchorage or the school district?
Representative Stoltz, through the chair. Well, it was Superintendent Como who asked the question. It came through the Municipality of Anchorage. I believe there was a resolution. I'm not sure what the process was from their end, but we dealt with municipal attorneys to craft the contract.
Question?
No, that's the answer. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for the interruption.
Sure.
We conducted a statewide recount and a recount for House District 5. We conducted both those recounts simultaneously to use the resources available to us, the over 60 to 70 people that were hired here in Juneau to run and the ballot counting machines to conduct the hand count, serve on the boards. costs ran approximately $39,000 to date. And again, the statute requires that those requesting a recount make a deposit. Again, that goes in the general fund. $10,000 for statewide recount, House District 5, $750, and that money's in the general fund. Cost of independent counsel. Independent counsel was sought to provide a review and advice related to the Ogun recall petition. That's over $37,000. Mainframe chargeback costs, the rise in absentee by mail applications and voter registration forms increased the division's chargeback costs for data entry time on the mainframe. Because we processed that many more absentee ballot applications, which also serve as a voter registration form, in addition to increase of over 170,000 voter registration applications. We're on the mainframe. Additionally, we're on the mainframe when we verify signature, when we verify addresses for petitions. So our time on the mainframe was excessive this year. Expedited printing and freight costs for forms due to the large number of political mailings and absentee by mail applications to voters generated higher absentee by mail participation by Alaskans. I think that you have a sheet with election statistics. We were up 103% from the last presidential year. So we did our best to anticipate, but we still needed to expedite printing and freight new forms up. Additionally, increased postage costs, approximately $19,000. There's still charges coming in on the postage related to conducting the election. And additional fax press machines. We had over 100% increase in Alaskans who wanted to vote by fax. That coming into our server was too great. We had to purchase two additional servers to increase the lines available, not only for Alaskans who wanted to submit their application to us, but so that we could send the ballots back to them and receive them. So that's those are the highlighted expenditures during the election cycle.
Okay. If I may, Representative Parker.
Please.
So if I understand this correctly, you're requesting about $695,000, but you have really, to be accurate here, you have a credit of $105,000 that the City of Anchorage gave us, but that has to go in the general fund and not go to your fund, and also $10,000. So we could say your net request is about $585,000.
Mr. Chairman, you could.
You could, okay. Unfortunately, that's not, some money's not going to you, and I understand that, but it's all one big pot here at the state of Alaska. Okay, Representative Hawkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you indulge me just a little latitude to ask a question, it doesn't quite go directly to this, but there's an anomaly on here that I'm wondering if Laura has some insight.
Go right ahead.
And that's that, you know, the absentee by mail ballots mailed, almost 60,000 this year. There was a lot of postage expense. But when they came around and sent them back to you, you only got about half of them back. And in the past, it looks like it's been, obviously, people that requested them mailed them back. Do you have any sense of where that discrepancy comes from?
Representative Hawker, through the chair, several areas that we're still working at finding all the reasons and causes. One obvious cause to us is, you'll note one of the statistics, special advance ballots. And what a special advance ballot is, it's set out in statute. And we did have it, you'll see, up 685%. So a person who requests a special advance ballot gets two ballots for an election cycle. They get what we call the special advance ballot. And that ballot is basically blank, has lines and instructions with the voter how to write the names in. That ballot's sent out far in advance, but with statutory timeline, in advance of the official ballot. So that person is sent a special advance ballot, but then is also sent an official election ballot. So there's two. So in that total, it's inclusive as absentee by mail ballots mailed. It's the special advance. So two ballots went out, one's counted. So that's part of it. The other is you'll see some requests for change in statutory language. The deadline to request an absentee by mail ballot is 7 days prior to an election. Certainly with the incredible increase in interest in voting by mail, when we had days where thousands of requests came in per day, to process that, we sent out the last ballots on, I believe, October 28th. You could certainly say that, they didn't get mailed back because the person didn't get the ballot in time, chose to vote another means. That would be a reason why fax voting is up as well, because they did not receive their by-mail ballot. So we mailed out. They may have chosen to vote in another manner. I think Representative Gatto testified in House State Affairs that he got an absentee by-mail ballot but chose to vote in person. So there are all of those reasons that government doesn't keep track of all the reasons why a person does or does not vote in a certain manner.
Thank you.
For the record, we have Representative Jewell with us, and I believe Representative Croft is with us now online. Representative Croft, are you with us? Well, he's supposed to be with us. How's that?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm here. Just can't figure out the technology.
Okay, very good. Well, it's good to have you with us, Representative Croft. Representative Stoltz.
And Representative Croft knew he was coming in more than loud and clear. Ms. Glazer, I think it was Meyer. On the fax ballots, I remember Terry Martin passed that bill years ago. It was primarily targeting military voters and overseas. Do you see any trends? Are you seeing a large number coming from certain locations, or do you track that? Have you seen some institutional use of that?
Representative Stoltz, through the chair, I would say that we did serve our men and women overseas through the BIFAX program, but I would also say that we did receive calls from people who said, this is cool, we're going to do it from work today, that's what we're doing today. So I was a legislative aide when Representative Martin carried the bill. I know the intent. We looked through the intent language as this year started to break open for us, because it's also very clear in statute that we have to tell a voter when they vote by fax that we're not responsible for the transmission of that ballot. I mean, you put a ballot over the fax machine, and there were anomalies where it didn't even appear as though there were lying on the fax ballot and the candidate was missing. In fact, it was our president. But we could show you hard copy what we faxed, and in transmission it did not. It was not intended, I don't believe, for fax voting to be used by everyone, but we did see, as you can see, an incredible interest in voting by fax this year.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Are there any organizations or institutions that you saw any heavy use from?
Representative Stoltz, through the chair, no, it just seemed to be individual interest. And if it were generated by an organization or institution, we didn't hear word, and usually you would in one of our regional offices or someone would.
So, I remember, as I recall, you forego your confidentiality.
That's correct.
And that's so it's not the most attractive way to vote.
That's
so
true.
Might need a Bush-Kerry recount if there was something.
Okay, anything else? Well, first of all, I meant to start out with this, Laura. Your group just did a fantastic job this last election. Obviously, everybody here is pleased with the results.
Some of us more than others.
That's true. Yeah, Thurston Holmes is a little close. But the municipality of Anchorage kind of piggybacking on all the other challenges that you had this election, you did an outstanding job, and certainly want to thank you and your staff for everything you've done. I do understand that there was a challenge to the U.S. Senate race, but I have not heard with the recount. What was the difference as far as the numbers go?
Representative Meyer, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to speak off the top of my head, so I might not be exactly on. Approximately 800 more votes. And almost equally, I would say Governor Knowles garnered, let's say if the division was in votes, 450. Knowles had 450 and Murkowski had 350. I'm talking in vague numbers. Those aren't accurate. But off the top of my head, that's what was added. And when there's a question about why there would be more votes counted in a recount, where did those 800 votes come from? That often happens in the tabulation of running it through the machine a second time. Additionally, because statutory requirement during a recount, it becomes a human call. The director's required to make the call on that vote. What was the voter's intent in that when they filled out that circle? If the machine didn't tally it the first time, it becomes the call during a recount to tally that vote.
I see. Well, then your accuracy was amazingly good, and that's good to know for all of us. And I guess in some ways the recount was good, because then it just verified and proved that your system is working as it's supposed to. Representative Holm, did you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just, Ms. Glazer, thank you so much for your work. It's an amazing job that you have, and I know it's difficult at times, especially with some of the legal challenges that you end up dealing with. I was curious as to how much roughly it costs for a recount per district. Is there any? I know you say you spent $40,000 roughly more for the statewide plus that district, but what roughly does it cost per district?
Representative Holm, through the chair, statutorily we set it at $750 for a district. That would not be compensatory if in fact we were doing a district. I don't have an analysis on district because we set the two together. We had the ballot tabulator set for the same, to do the Senate and House District 5 at the same time. So I can't give you an accurate cost analysis on the recount. We could probably pull back to 2000 and, what year was that? I can't know. 2002, we did Representative Hawker.
Well, I guess was curious if the amount of money that we're asking people to put forth is anywhere as close to what it costs, or is it just an arbitrary number?
Representative Holm, through the chair, I believe that the question came up in Senate Finance, and I don't believe these sections of statute have been changed since the 60s. So we have put through in the governor's bill, Senate Bill 66, and probably will be incorporating one of the election bills, an increase in the recount costs and deposit required, and the language to say that if it costs less than that, the state would refund, and if it costs more, that the requester for the recount would pay more.
And through the chair, a follow-up, and that would depend upon the number or how close it is, the half of 1% or whatever the number is.
Representative Holm, through the chair, that's not the area that we're affecting, because that which the state would have to pay for if it were that close, I know yours was a very tight margin, if it were that close, this doesn't affect that. This goes to more the kind of recount that when you conduct, just to test the system, which we had to this year, was no one expected the margin to change, but the testing of the system. But that which the state has to, we're not proposing to affect that margin.
Okay, Swan. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to, philosophically, it wouldn't be the goal of the of your division to have costs be commensurate. I mean, and my filing fee was $30. I expect the ballots cost more than that to print. And I assume that there is an arbitrariness at one time in setting that amount just to make it so it's not frivolous, but not prohibitive. Is that it's not? You're not suggesting we change those, are you?
Representative Stoltz, through the chair, there is legislation to change the dollar amount, the deposits. And yes, there is a substantive increase to what's currently in statute, but that's to put before the policymakers in the legislature to decide what is fair and equitable and what should be the state's burden in a recount. Obviously, here you're looking at close to $30,000, and that's a policy call.
Anything else, Dr. Stoltz?
I'm just at the risk, or thank you, Mr. Chairman, at the risk of debating a bill that's not before us. There's also, we do have a level, however, if a race is so close that the state does the recount automatically without charging the parties.
Yeah, Representative Hawker, through the chair, I believe that was the question Representative Holm was asking, and I told him what we would propose to change is not to affect that at all.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. And I know we will be discussing this bill again once we get the Senate version over. But it looks like over half of your requested money that you're asking for here is personnel services. And a lot of these, I would imagine, okay, it does say here, is the overtime pay that you have to pay, and so your employees are non-exempt, and that's why they get the not, that's why they get the overtime pay, is that correct?
Representative, Mr. Chairman, the overtime is both for the staff that's on board, but also the overtime for the temporaries. Okay. It isn't a question that they're exempt or not. I believe it's the admin, their PCN, or their, you know, what their staff duties are that determine whether they're supervisorial or not and whether they are able to receive overtime or not. We do our best with our management to try and carry the load, including myself, but you know, we did have to bring, they did need to stay.
So many hours you can work, right?
That's right.
Okay, very good. Representative Croft, did you have any questions? We have your amendment here, but since we're holding the bill over, I would prefer not to take up your amendment today. But certainly, if you have any questions for Ms. Glazier, feel free to fire away.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
And I guess not on that issue. We can save it for when you're prepared for amendments. I wanted to go back to what Representative Stoltz and others were talking about. And I know it's on a coming bill, but I just wanted to understand what's coming. So there's going to be a proposal that in certain categories of recounts, as close as we can come to the complete cost of the recount, be shifted to the person requesting. Is that correct?
Representative Croft, to the chair, that's correct.
And not those 1% category where there were with the people, the candidates are within 1%.
Representative Croft through the chair, that's correct.
Yeah. But then that's all I have. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Croft. Any other questions for Ms. Glazier? Seeing none. Thank you very much. And again, job well done.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there anybody else? So I don't have anyone else lined up to testify via teleconference. Is there anyone in the audience who wanted to testify on this particular bill? Okay, seeing none, then we will go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 79. And as I mentioned, we'll just set this aside for a few days and wait for the other bill to come over. So with that, let's take a brief at ease as we switch out the presenters.
Bring us back to order. Second part of the agenda for the meeting today is an overview from Aetna Healthcare. And today we have Nicole Salinas and Mike Wiggins. Nicole is the accounting executive, and Mike is, it just says with Aetna. That's the name of Mike.
Thank you.
And I think my staff has been working with Aetna on a short overview that they would like to put on and try to answer some of the questions that seems like we get in our office on a day-to-day basis from the employees of the state. So, Mike or Nicole, one of you would like to start, you have the floor.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you mentioned, we would like to start today by giving you an overview of the Aetna contract with the state of Alaska, go through some of the items are actually our responsibility and roles. Take your questions, answer them to the best of our ability today. And if there's something that we can't answer, we'll be happy to take it as a takeaway and follow up with that material at a later date for you. Just to give you some history of our relationship, the Aetna and Save Alaska relationship dates back to 1982 when we first had a contract. There has been multiple competitive bids over time. The state of Alaska is required to go out to a competitive bid situation every 5 years. So we've had the opportunity to come back to the table and negotiate with the state of Alaska every 5 years. Most arrangements are a 3-year deal with a two-year additional renewable. And how that works is there's usually a three-year rate guarantee, and then the following 2 years are up for a renewal discussion. Just looking in general at the size of this case, to give you a snapshot of how big and complex it is, there's 52,000 retiree members that are covered and 14,000 active members. The active population has been pretty consistent and flat in size over the past couple of years. The retirees tend to grow about 4 to 6% annually. Of course, those are new retirees that are under age 65 coming in through the PERS and TERS organizations. Our current arrangement with the state of Alaska covers services that include medical, claims payment, dental, pharmacy, vision. We work on the long-term care program. We also do additional services as part of this contract that include a 24-hour nurse advice line, managed behavioral health services, an EAP, which is an assistance, employee assistance program. And to put some dollars around the use of the program, the retirees had about $225 million in medical and pharmacy claims pay, and the actives had about $43 million claims pay for medical and pharmacy. And the actual claim volume itself is about 1.2 million claims processed on an annual basis, and we answered 154,000 member calls into our call center. So as I mentioned, the plan itself is complex. You have a lot of folks that are double and triple covered. That means we're coordinating benefits under multiple plans. We've partnered with the Department of Administration the past couple of years to make sure we have a strong relationship in place. We take several avenues of approach to make sure that partnership is working and have open lines of communication. We are up here actually meeting with them today and tomorrow, meeting with the staff to find areas of improvement and opportunity that we can both meet upon. We have performance guarantees, which Mike will talk about, that we review are part of our contract. We have bi-weekly operation calls with the staff over in retirement and benefits, where we're actually going through how we're performing on a weekly basis. And we participate with the Health Benefits Evaluation Committee and the PERS and TERS boards on a regular basis. So now I'm going to have Mike just quickly give you an overview about some of the roles that Aetna does and some of the responsibilities that are the state's.
Thank you, Nicole. Our representatives and Mr. Chair, there's a common misconception that appears to be still exists in the state. From 1982 to 1996, Aetna insured the state of Alaska. With that, in that role, we actually set the premiums and we bore the financial risk for the coverage. In 1996, the state went out to bid on a self-funded basis, and they have been self-funded and self-funded on their medical since 1997. And many of the roles versus being fully insured and self-insured now the state bears. Some of the roles that the state bears today is the state gives Aetna on a monthly basis for retirees and bi-monthly on actives a list of who is eligible for benefits. And that's who we pay coverage on. Additionally here, unlike 1982 to 1996, the benefits are actually determined by the state. They're not filed with the State Department of Insurance. They determine the benefits they would ask Aetna to administer. Additionally, unlike from 1982 to 1996, we don't write the benefit booklets. The booklets that are written, that I think most of you that are also on the plan today, is written by the State Department of Admin. Additionally here, the state, when they went self-funded, put in that the final level of appeals, or being the claim fiduciary, is borne by the state. What that means, the first bit, that members have the right to appeal a claim The first two levels of appeal are handled by Aetna, but ultimately the decision whether a claim gets paid on an appeal basis is done by the state of Alaska. I think that I think that's been codified, and that can be borne by administrative law judges. It can also be done by the boards or the division itself. The services that Aetna provides for the state, obviously the most simple is that we do the claims administration. We do the case management. I think if you've ever had a hospitalization, probably a nurse calls you and we case manage you through your hospitalization. We do provider relations. It's a little more complex. I think Nicole was talking how complex this state. Those 52,000 retirees are in all 50 states and several foreign countries. And we deal with the provider relations issues in all those places of location. We do the data reporting when requested by the division or the state's requirement to set their rates. Essentially, we furnish the historical experience to the division and their actuaries as they set the premiums. Which I guess that's a big difference to that when we were fully insured. The state sets the premium rates for both the retirees and active plans. A big thing that we add to all of this equation is that we do the negotiation of provider discounts. We negotiate in ancillaries and also with pharmacies. And those are some of the services that we make available to the state of for working with Aetna. I guess I just also just give you a little perspective about how many people work on the state. We have two people here in Juneau that handle walk-in traffic. We have six people that are in Anchorage. So our location is at 711 H Street. And we have a dedicated service unit for our Seattle, so made up of 55 staff. I guess if on that basis, I think I probably would like to turn over to questions to the committee.
Any questions? Probably have a couple. When you're talking about self-insured, has there ever been any numbers put together that you know of whether the state is actually saving money being self-insured or partially insured over what the cost may be today if we were fully insured through that?
Mr. Chairman, as far as I know, the numbers haven't been put together. I will answer if I could take a little spin a little different on that question.
Sure.
Most groups of your size, which we're talking about, $300 plus million are self-funded. It's just because of the size of the plan. $300 million in many states is the size of many insurance companies. And essentially, that's what the state has become, is its own insurance company. And there are some advantages, but to your original questions, I have seen no financial analysis if it is to their benefit or not to their benefit.
Also, under your current contract, there's a section in there that deals with membership satisfaction. And just curious, I think you guys do the polls, you're supposed to poll the members, and then come back with some type of tracking process to, see what the satisfaction rate is of members. I'm just curious, is that information available, or has it been?
Just a couple, if I could put that into two pieces. We haven't done a member satisfaction, which is a mail out, for quite some time. It has been done during the tenure of the contract. But we have a thing that we do track that we actually just discussed with the administration today. We have a thing that's called first call, first claim. We actually call a statistical number of the members after they've had an interaction with us, and we ask if they are satisfied or not with their interaction with Aetna. That information is readily available, and we can share that with the committee if that is a request that they would like.
Okay. Representative Stoltz.
Chairman Schultz. When mandated coverages of different health or new areas are proposed to be added, I'm not sure how the dynamic works. Do our people in the administration consult you and analyze what it's going to cost the system? Do you have any role in trying to help us
Representative Stoltz, through the chair, we have been asked from time to time, as the state has looked to add benefits that have been mandated or legislative impact for adding benefits, we have filled that capacity. What the actual addition to the plan is the division's role.
Representative Stoltz?
Your knowledge, that information that you have given the state, does that filter back? Do you think? I'm not really aware, but.
Representative Stoltz, the chair, we're not either. We furnished the information here. We haven't, what's done with it after that, we're not that privy to.
Would it be within our scope to be able to ask your company directly outside of the administration? I mean, is that something you could give us, or are we outside of the chain of, we said, hey, if we want to add gastric bypass, what's that going to cost the system?
Representative Stoltz, the chair, I'm not exactly sure how to answer the question. Right now, by contract, we work for the division, and we haven't yet worked with committees directly.
That's helpful. Thanks.
Also, since 99, the health care premiums for our retired employees have increased nearly 100%. I'm just interested to find out, is that not observed any trends relating to senior retirees?
Mr. Chair, the phenomenon is not unique to your retirees. I can make some general observation of what's driving your health care cost if you would like to hear them. Pharmacy cost makes the news. And if you didn't know, you have two set different populations for your retirees. You have under 65 and you have over 65. Retirees that are over 65, majority of their medical care cost is borne by Medicare. The state's financial liability is primarily pharmacy. Pharmacy has been, if you've been following the national news for the last 5 years, has been going up at a tune of probably in the 20s, low 20%. Pharmacy cost for your retirees is approximately 30% of your overall cost. But in acknowledgement of that, the PERS and TERS boards here, I think you probably have also heard the phenomenon about generic utilization. Generic drugs cost a lot more than brand drugs. And since 2001, the retirees have their generic utilization has gone from the low 30s to the low 40s. And there have been a lot of education processes that have worked on that. So on your retiree population, the largest driver of your health care costs, by how you're looking at historical data, has been pharmacy. But I think Nicole at the beginning here said that your retirees grow at the range of 4 to 6%. So if you look at your population, assuming it's 5% for the 5 years here, your population for retirees has gone up 25% in that 5 year period of time. Those 25% increase in your retirees, I'm not sure if you're aware, but almost all of those are under the age of 65, which are the most expensive retirees because Medicare does not pay for their health care costs and the state is really responsible. Mr. Chairman, that would be my comments.
Okay, and I guess that may lead me into another question. Now, whether it's Aetna's responsibility or maybe it's the state's responsibility, but I know that we have an issue out there where there's an issue with coverage verification for retiree benefits, and it deals with retiree dependents that may or may not be qualified for coverage. And I'm interested, is that an issue that you would look at, or is that an issue that the state would look at? As far as, basically it deals with retirees that have older children that I think the policy now is at 18, if they're not going to college, then they come off of the, or in some type of trade school, they come off of the insurance. And, you know, there's some feeling that some of that, that particular section may have been abused, and that there were some people that received benefit when they weren't actually eligible. So I don't know if that's an issue that you guys have looked at, or if that's a more state issue because they managed the plan.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's probably a state issue. My understanding of the issue is that they have a benefit booklet that had not a requirement for a dependent to be student, and that was what we were asked to administer, and actually the statute was different. But I think that is an issue for the state.
Okay. And one clarification, I thought a while ago you said that generic drugs cost more than...
Oh, I apologize. It must be something in my water. I apologize. Yeah.
It very easily could be. So, Representative Jewell.
You mentioned that the pharmaceuticals are reasonable, the costs are going up. What do you see coming down the pike over the next 5 years in that period?
Well, there's a number of things. Representative Jewell through the chair. On retirees, the federal government seems to, I don't know if people are aware of the Medicare reform bill that was passed in 2004 at the federal level, and they look like here, they're looking to incentivize employers who continue having pharmacy coverage for their employees to provide a subsidy here. It ranges about 28%, and so that is some relief that is on the immediate horizon. Long term, there's a lot of things coming down the pipe. Most specifically, some of them are very serious, very expensive, and those would be injectable biologicals that are very expensive, that are for treatment of very low incidence, very expensive incidence of diseases. So we'll be dealing with that.
I think I was listening to NPRA last night or the night before. Now that the elections are over, I'm understanding that the cost of prescription drugs are going to try and quietly increase. And I'm just,
I think I read the same article, and I think there have been that phenomenon for several different elections here as they looked that there was regulation at looming over their industry. I read the same article, but I've not seen any factual part of that.
Any other questions? For the record, Representative Scali has problems. Seeing no other questions, Nicole, Mike, I appreciate you coming, especially on the short notice that you were given.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And as we look more into the health care issues, I'm sure that we'll be contacting either yourself or both the state and yourself to try to determine some of these costs for education. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll turn the meeting back over to you if you want to go to that.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairman. That concludes the business we had for today's meeting. I want to thank the Aetna folks for joining us.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Kropp.
Well, I would love to get, I think we should get, some of the numbers that some of the members were asking on whether I think we probably have saved money by going to self-insured with them managing, but we ought to be able to answer those questions as the Finance Committee. And I guess it's to the administration to get us some sort of estimate of whether the decision in 1996 has saved or cost money.
I agree, Mr. Cross. And we'll try to find those numbers out and see if we can't get some of the other questions answered that were asked.
Great. Okay, thank you.
Yes, Representative Croft, I'd forgotten you were still with us. Anything else you want to add or contribute before we adjourn?
No. Appreciate it, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. All right. Okay, for tomorrow. Calcutta has been postponed, so we're not taking up the Calcutta pools tomorrow, but we will be taking up House Bill 76, which is Big Game Services and Commercial Services Board.
And we're going to try to get the CS back from, is that House Bill 46? We'll try to get that, and we're still waiting on the CS, but if we do have it, we'll take that up also on Wednesday. And then more likely we'll be able to cancel Thursday and Friday. So if there's nothing else to come for the committee, we are adjourned.